And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be Alabama. I'm talking about we go way on down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. Boomer, I've got a red alert for you.
Okay, red alert.
Red alert.
I wish I need a red alert button, too.
We do. Didn't we used to have sirens or something?
I took the sirens out because we didn't like them.
Oh, Lord. Well, this would be, if we still had it, this would be a siren issue right here. There's an article that just came out on Fox. I saw it during the break. I mean, literally just came out in the last 30 minutes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh, what is it?
Apparently, they're talking about making a sequel to Gladiator. A sequel.
Really?
To the greatest, one of the greatest man movies of all time.
I don't know what to think about this.
Of course, Russell Crowe won't be in it, and what the article's about is the fact that, you know, his character died at the end of the first movie.
And
spoiler alert, 20 years ago.
Yeah. He made that that character.
I mean, yeah. So it's going to be apparently what happens after, you know, like the follow up to all of that when, you know, when they restore Rome,
right?
And, you know, and it, I just don't know about this.
I'm not sure.
I may have to just kind of do some ruminating on it a little bit here. I'm not sure about it.
Yeah, I may have to let it just simmer.
I mean, it's like saying
figure this out.
It's like saying making a sequel to Tombstone. You can't do that. How do you do that?
Exactly.
Although I will say, The Magnificent Seven, the original, well, the new one they did with Chris Pratt and Denzel Washington.
That was pretty
good.
Pretty good.
I'm saying. Of course, that was a complete redo. That was like a reboot altogether, but that was different. That was better.
Yeah.
It was better.
I'm going to have to think about this one. Gladiator is like
I've already thought. There's no way it could beat it. No way.
Oh, there's no way it could beat it.
No way.
But don't even like, if you're going to do it, don't even mesh it together. Don't like say it's like another Gladiator.
Do you have a sound effect for home fries?
You mean that?
Yes. All right, so number one of the triple dipper, home fries. So thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Let's throw them on there and sizzle some up, man. Just going to do a little home fries. Hit it one more time while we're at it. Home fries. Thank you. Thank you very much. You did good on that. All
thanks,
right, so home fries is a segment we do periodically where I'm just going to collect up stories about where we live right here in the most beautiful state in the nation, Alabama. So, Sweet Home Alabama's got news. It's got things going on, some good, some difficult. And I will tell you this, right out the gate, Boomer and I need to go eat pizza. So, story on yellowhammer.com. Did you know, and I don't know if you saw this when you were preparing the resources or not, Boomer. I know sometimes you have to fly through what I send you. But nonetheless, did you know that more than 90 competitors that a guy named Joe Carlucci from Original Valentina's Pizzeria and Wine Bar in on Huntsville Browns Ferry Road in Madison, has just been named the best pizza maker in the world.
In the world?
The world. Like, from where pizza comes from? No. It doesn't matter where. It's Madison, right here in the state of Alabama, in our listening area, the greatest pizza in the world.
We're going to have to go.
Just, like, soon. So, yeah. So, Bronx-born Carlucci is the owner and founder of the Original Valentina's Pizzeria and Wine Bar on Huntsville Browns Ferry Road in Madison. His titles as Best Pizza Maker and Best Non-Traditional Pizza came at the recent International Pizza Expo in Las Vegas. He's been making pizza since he was 15, it says. He was mentored by his 14-time world pizza champion, a guy named Tony Gimignani. And he says that he won the Best Traditional Style Pizza in the World. He's a 5-time world pizza champion. He's a 2-time Guinness World Record holder. He's a 3-time world champion pizza acrobat, whatever that is. What? And he's won awards and competitions worldwide. And he's right here in our listening area, dude. How did we not know this?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but I do know this. I'm eating pizza like sometime real soon.
We may have to do a remote there.
The guy, do they serve maple bacon donuts?
They may. Maybe it'll be maple bacon pizza.
He's appeared on national TV shows like Today, Martha and Snoop, MasterChef Kids, Best in Dough. So here's what he used to win. You ready? I'll be honest. This is a bit highbrow. This is not the usual roll on the red sauce and slap it on the pan kind of stuff for me. He used mystery ingredients for a white pie topped with a mozzarella cheese blend, a sweet sausage, and a soppressata mixture with a honey peppadew-infused ricotta and topped with a chiffon spinach. Dang. I don't know that I can afford this pizza.
Yeah.
But I love this. He says he was asked about his success. He says, when you let God drive your bus, anything is possible.
Ooh, I like him.
All right, so we got to go. Congratulations, then, to right here in our listening area to where's it? Joe Carlucci from Original Valentina's Pizzeria and Wine Bar up there in Madison. Love it. Oh, Joe from, oh, you know what? Joe from Athens just texted in and says, go early or wait. So I guess that means more people know about it than me. All right. In other news around the state of Alabama, I don't know if y'all heard this or not, but there was another train derailment, and it was just, what, 2 days ago or yesterday? No, Saturday. It was Saturday, I'm sorry, in Jasper. Yeah, story on Yellowhammer again. Yellowhammer, the Norfolk Southern derailment Saturday night in Jasper, was the latest in a string of train derailments across the country, but it was the first one to have caused injuries to its crew members. So the crash happened near, right here in our listening area again, 1350 Old Russellville Road in Jasper. Two of the crew were injured, but they were treated at a hospital and released. The lead locomotive and 11 cars derailed. There were no toxic chemicals or anything like that, no spills. But the two crew members were initially trapped inside the engine room. It's not the first one, too. By the way, it also points out that just last month in Calhoun County, a 37 car train went off the rails, and it did have a mixed materials, hazardous materials cargo, but it was they were actually empty at the time. So yay. Anyway, that's two in a month, and I'll be honest, I don't know if, I mean, Boomer, I don't recall ever seeing so many train derailments. Like growing up, you used to play by the tracks and wave to the conductors as they went by and all that. I do not remember hearing about derailments. Do you?
No, are they more common than we thought?
Well, you know, Pete Buttigieg says that it's far more common than we had thought, but I took that with a grain of salt. But now they're like showing up left and right. So, are the tracks worn out? Is maintenance bad? Are people doing things to the tracks? I don't know. All I know is I'd never heard of train derailments until here lately. Hmm. I could be wrong. We got more text coming in. Boomer, I love your home fries sound effect, but now I really want some home fries, says John from Huntsville. David from Huntsville again says, I was going to say, let me know we're going to Madison or Joe's number one world pizza. And then Tony from Piedmont says he also likes Terry's in Huntsville. Terry's is good. All right, next story, 1819 News. So I'll tell you what, one of the things that I cannot help but take note of is the fact that our state attorney general, Steve Marshall, is constantly pushing back on wokeness. I don't think it gets near the coverage that it should. He is constantly fighting the battle against woke. He's constantly fighting liberals. He's going to war with the Biden administration on a regular basis. And so, yeah, 1819 News reports Alabama AG Steve Marshall backs the Florida ban on Medicaid funding for gender transitions. Can you imagine this? The idea that some states are going to use Medicaid dollars. That's for indigent patients. It's not supposed to be for electives, and this is a purely elective. Although they'll tell you, no, it's gender affirming. We have to mutilate these children as quickly as possible. They need it. No, they don't. You bunch of vipers, bunch of vampires. Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall filed an amicus brief with 16 other states supporting Florida's healthcare regulation that denies Medicaid coverage. So what happens with an amicus brief or amicus, depending upon, you know, potato, potato. Anyway, what happens is there's a lawsuit going on. Other people chime in because they believe they have an interest in the case. And so you're not necessarily getting into the lawsuit. You're just providing your input to the court. An amicus brief is what that translates to is friend of the court brief. In other words, I have Your Honor, I have something that I want to make sure that you're aware of and how this would impact us. And so you write this brief and you submit. Well, they submitted it on the side of, you know, banning Medicaid funding for gender transitions. Steve Marshall, it points out in the article, he says, protecting our children from these life-altering and damaging treatments continues to be our priority. And for many of the same reasons why kids should not be subjected to these treatments, the use of taxpayer dollars on these experimental medical interventions is unacceptable. So he steadfastly supports Florida. Yeah. And you know, they point out too that sometimes you get like, he'll tell you, I guarantee you, if you asked him why he filed the brief, he would say, because he supports not only the safety of Alabama citizens, but the rule of law. But then the opposing briefs were filed by like the American Academy of Pediatrics and the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. And he points out they had a pretty self-serving need to file those briefs. I got a story here. I think I'll wait till after the break. Been a lot of nanny state stuff going on down yonder in Montgomery. Just like, how far into our business can the government go? And do they think about the second and third order effects? I'm going to talk about it too, also at the top of the hour with Jeff Poor. But yeah, this, all right, so we've got bills right now that are designed to pretty much micromanage your life in some ways and also make you be held accountable for other things. Take us to a break, Boomer. We'll do that when we get back. All Alabama-centric. Why? Because we're doing some home fries. Home fries right now. News here around the house. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Yeah, making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, listen, we're still in number one, home fries. Hit that sound effect, Boomer. That was as good. Oh, home fries. I like it. Okay, so home fries is a segment we do once in a while just to go ahead and cover down on news around right here around the home, right here on the home front in the realm of Alabama. Here your communities are making news, and we got to make sure we talk about that too. It's not always about what happens in D.C. But that being said, I gotta tell you, there's been some filing of the nanny bills, nanny state bills down in Montgomery. And it's always intriguing when you watch legislators forget that the second and third order effects of what they think is a great idea may just be government getting way too deep in our business. It may just be that they're going a step too far. Like, I'll never forget. So State Senator Vivian Figures, she's a senator from down in Mobile area, Democrat. She and I never saw eye to eye on policy for the most part, but we got along well outside of policy. But she always brought a bill, and she had a passion for it. She had a passion for bills that were anti-smoking. I mean, she's like an anti-smoking crusader. I get it. But then she brought a bill one day again for the 19th time and went to the podium wanting to talk about her bill to ban smoking in all places of employment. What does that mean? What's a workplace? And so I went to the podium and I said, I'd like to know how you define a workplace. And she goes, well, what do you mean? How do I define it? It's where people have to work. They shouldn't have to be subjected to secondhand smoke. I said, well, yeah, but okay, what's a workplace though? I said, so let me ask you this. What about the guy who has an apartment with a balcony and he smokes on his balcony? He pays rent to be there. It's his home. But the guy who is the groundskeeper for the apartment complex, he's working right outside there trimming the bushes. Isn't that his workplace? I mean, are we now blowing secondhand smoke into his workplace, even though it's outside? Well, now you're just making stuff up. I said, well, I'm not. I said, so what about this? How about the guy, and I don't cotton to it much, but how about the guy who his dream has been to own his own bar, and he knows he won't make a living if he says you can't smoke here? Or the guy who wants to own a cigar bar, for that matter. What about that? Are you just going to say, but that's their workplace? Well, now you're just picking. I said, no, I'm not. What I'm trying to tell you is you got a big government bill that's going so far down into people's business that you have no idea where it's going to end because someone's going to redefine it in ways you had never intended. Anyway, got another one like that right now. Here's one for you. So State Representative Barbara Drummond, Democrat out of Mobile, she filed a bill in the Alabama House just last week. Yellowhammer has a story on it. just filed a bill last week that would charge parents if their child brings an unsecured firearm to school. Okay, I got issues with this. Now, I am totally of the mind that gun owners have to be responsible. You cannot just have loaded firearms laying around willy-nilly. When my grandkids come, we make sure things are locked up. When my kids were young, I had trigger locks. I had, you know, other safety measures. But all that to say, y'all, how do we put a Class C felony onto a parent who had no idea the kid had absconded with daddy's gun? How many people do you know of who thought they were locking up the liquor cabinet and their teenager got in there anyway, right? If a gun walks out the house, can you charge the parents with a felony? Well, I guess, you know, if there's some complicitness, if there's a parent who said, here, Junior, take this to school, you'll be cool. I mean, that's a bad deal. But here's the thing. She says that the bill makes common sense. Sure she does. She reiterated in the article that a parent would only be charged if it was proven the student had the firearm because it was, quote, not properly secured by the parent. So now I have to ask the question, second and third order effects here. What does not properly secured even mean? Are they going to mandate a certain type of lockbox? Are they going to mandate that it has to have biometrics so the child can't open it? Are they going to mandate that the gun has to have a trigger lock on it? Are they going to tell you that it has to be remained unloaded at all times and that ammunition has to be stored in a different room? What? Where does it end? What does properly secured mean? And that's what they're not thinking of. Nanny state bills like this are just, I see a good idea and I want to stop something or make something happen. It's also what I would call somewhat of an unfunded mandate. You're going to put this bill in place and you're going to make people have to spend money on something to comply with your neat notions. All right, next story, 1819 News broke a story, man. Boomer, do you remember the thing about the mayor from Montgomery got caught saying some pretty foul stuff on a tape? He's nodding his head to me. So Mayor Stephen Reed of Montgomery, liberal dude, he apparently got caught on a tape dissing on Governor Ivey, cussing about how much he doesn't need to worry about trying to please Maxwell Air Force Base, which is a major, major economic force in the Montgomery area. And then, oh, by the way, even though he's a black man, he had a pretty profane tirade about how he didn't need the black vote. And it was a pretty awful recording. It was so bad that 1819 broke it, and the other news outlets realized they had to cover it. And then it got so bad that Mayor Stephen Reed realized he had to address it. I mean, when you get all that to happen, you know you've broken a story and they're having to dance to your tune. Well, kudos to 1819 News. They got that story. Well, then the mayor came out and had his little press conference where he said, it was a setup. Whole thing's taken out of context. No, not really. Those were your words. We heard your voice. Well, there was a guy who was trying to manipulate me, trying to dun me for money, and he thought he was going to get some money out of the city and extort us. Anyway, he went on, and he named a guy he thought it was. Now the story turns around. Said guy he thought it was is suing the mayor. Suing the mayor, claiming he has suffered damage to his reputation, seeking damages in terms of pecuniary and exemplary form. That's punitive damages. This is going to be interesting. But nonetheless, Mayor Reed got himself a little legal action going because he didn't know how to take responsibility for his own actions. Classic. All right, I got a couple more stories. Not sure if we'll get to them here. Well, you know what? I will. I got probably 1 minute. Here's one state. I don't have 1 minute. How long do I have? Never mind. Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right. Well, you know what? I'll cover it later, maybe with Jeff Poore, who's calling in momentarily. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. all you right side.